So this is side two of the 10th session, recorded on July 25th, 2006. And the quote from Barry Nevitt got cut off from his 1985 book, Keeping Ahead of Economic Panic. So Scott's going to read the last sentence that you didn't hear completed. So scenarios.
Scenarios, obsolescent at peak performance, will proliferate as art forms, while present action moves from sequent play to simultaneous interplay and instant replay.
Yes, simultaneous interplay and instant replay is another way of talking about tactility, proprioception of the world business.
Now, proprioception and tactile are actually slightly different terms. You make it sound like you were equating one with the other just now.
Well, tactility is an interplay of all kinds of functions, and it's not anything in itself. It's the thing that does the interplaying. So it's a tactile statement to say tactility and proprioception. You know, mm-hmm. I'm saying there's something that interplays and then given an example, even though that example is only one part of tactility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what McLuhan called hendiades in a way. Hendiades was a grammatical term that was like defining something, but you repeat the characteristic and say, and look like you're saying two different things, but you're just saying one thing, but you need to say two. So you could say the dishes were gold and yellow rusted. Yellow rusted is like gold. So it's like saying the dishes were gold and gold, but you go gold and yellow rusted. You add this extra thing just to create some kind of vividness or something. That is like just trying to describe tactility. So I'm doing a hendiades when I say tactility and proprioception. Proprioception is what most people would think is tactility, because you think of how you need it to balance yourself. You feel it. And if you're a little dizzy, your proprioception's off, right? So you kind of modulate it somehow on an inner level, inner muscle level. And you orchestrate tensions in your feet and legs and arms and tendons to get your balance back, right? So that inner balancing thing is an approximation of tactility, which is balancing all the sensory input to make coherent consciousness. So I threw a lot of terms around there. I apologize for bringing in hendiades, which is H-E-N-D-I-A-D-Y-S, hendiades. Sorry to bring that up. Might be a little too complex right now. So, anyways, it's relevant in the future. So let's go on to the next couple of quotes from McLuhan, because we're trying to show you different aspects of the original paragraph we laid out for you, where he said show business becomes world business, and banking will tend toward not the takeover of business, which is hardware commodities, but of politics. And politics is show business, and that's Hollywood. So that's the new business. That's 30 years ago. Let's go on to a couple more quotes so that we see the more ramifications of these statements. There was
a lot of meat in the last quote, and we read it, but we didn't really go into it.
Yeah, we're going to go back over that.
Okay.
I just want to give people a range of the spectrum here. So the next one is from McLuhan's 1970 book that he wrote by himself called Culture is Our Business. So let's read that short paragraph.
One of the many flips of our times is that electronic information environment returns man to the condition of the most primitive prober and hunter. Privacy invasion is now one of our biggest knowledge industries.
Now look at that. Privacy invasion is now one of our biggest knowledge industries. Think of the recent security agency spying on citizens. The next paragraph from Understanding Media, page 190, look at what he says in this one. He's talking about a guy named Douglas Cater.
Right. So he, meaning Douglas Cater, emphasizes the paradox that the press is dedicated to the process of cleansing by publicity, and yet that in the electronic world, the seamless web of events, most affairs must be kept secret. top secrecy is translated into public participation and responsibility by the magic flexibility of the controlled news leak.
Now, there's a lot in that one, but we go back to Barry Nevitz's quote. Today, apart from government itself, the biggest show business is putting secrets on display. And he says here, top secrecy is translated into public participation. That's putting secrets on display. Now, that's the process of cleansing by publicity. In the electronic world, where most affairs must be kept secret, because in the information society, power and wealth comes from information. You ain't going to tell anybody it. So you got a lot of conflicting situations here. So what would be the secrets that could be put into public display, and what secrets would not be allowed to be kept secret? It would not be allowed to be made public. Only puny secrets need protection, but it's a game of protection because the press will eventually leak it because of the flexibility of the controlled news leak, which allows the process of cleansing by publicity. But the real affairs, the hidden ground, are what's kept secret. And that's the big discoveries protected by public incredulity. So you see, I'm starting to overlap the quotes here. When war and market merge, all money transactions begin to drip blood. All right? Looking at the Barry Nevitz quote from 1985, private history in camera, that means secret, has become public myth by time compression on camera. That's saying the same thing as McLuhan saying 8 years earlier, the process of cleansing by publicity. And you get public participation in the secrets of corruption in national governments or in political offices. Those things are puny secrets because on the world business level, which is show business globally, there are no nations. So therefore, you can have lots of scandals being exposed on local nouns, local adjectives. But the real tactile nature of the global environment is something that can't be described. What's that?
Timer.
Oh, okay. So you're just
setting
so
it.
So what is put on camera is the old secrets, the puny secrets, and what is not put on camera is the big discoveries, which is what McLuhan is talking about. Because the big discoveries are that we live in a situation where we have a deja vu of all times and places now here. Now, deja vu means it feels like we have all times and places, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we do have all times and places. What we have here is not even a present in a sense of a moment, because the present action moves from sequent play, that means sequential play, to simultaneous interplay and instant replay. There's no sense of direction there, and it's very hard to get a handle on simultaneous interplay. How could you visualize that? So scenarios will proliferate as art forms, because privacy invasion is now one of our biggest knowledge industries. And a knowledge industry includes having a news story, then having government investigations of them, or police investigation. Then the people found guilty write books, and they make big bestsellers, and movies are made about them. That generates knowledge and information about puny secrets.
Mm-hmm. But these are things that can happen in an information environment or that are likely to happen. They're not things that are necessarily programmed by virtue of being in it. I don't know that Watergate
It is programmed. That's the point here. Because he's saying the controlled news leak, that is a programming of the environment. Let's look at the next.
What was the hidden agenda behind Watergate, behind the controlled leak of Watergate?
Well,
I mean, it appears that Watergate happened because you had the Deep Throat guy and the investigative reporter, and a secret was discovered and it was leaked, but it wasn't necessarily programmed by any on any large conspiracy level or for any particular purpose other than.
That's all that was thought about. That was where conspiracy theory had its golden hour, is that everybody wondered who set up Nixon, who set up Gordon Liddy, who set up the Democratic office that was broken into. There was endless pattern recognition around the idea of conspiracies. Nobody knew who did what to who. Who was Deep Throat? Who was controlling him? That was public participation in an issue which was puny,
I think,
compared to the global world business. A little office called the White House, with its local elections called the national elections. These are puny operations compared to the actual global businesses going on. That global business that the banker has to come in and modulate and program. So it's a matter of shifting your image of what you think you're inside of. You think you're inside the United States? No, you're not. You're inside the global discount electronic environment, what I call the TV body. If we go to the next quote from Understanding Media, you want to read the next quote? Because it deals with the Watergate thing, and this was 8 years before Watergate.
Oh.
This is page 182 and 183 of Understanding Media.
Okay. When electric speed is introduced into such a delegated and representational organization, the obsolescent organization can only be made to function by a series of subterfuges and makeshifts. These strike some observers as base betrayals of the original aims and purposes of the established forms.
Yeah. In other words, you create a reality that there is power in the White House by setting up a situation where the sacredness of the White House is violated by the president or someone else. That implies, if something sacred has been violated, that there's something important there. And that's what he means by here. You make an obsolescent organization, the National Congress, can only be made to function by a series of subterfuges and makeshifts. And yet those that are inside those environments and are thinking in terms of constitutional rights and privacy rights and the traditional American values, they think there's been a base betrayal of the original aims and purposes of the established forms. But they don't recognize that established forms need to be endlessly purged by newspaper exposés to give them a sense of reality, because in the larger environment that everybody really lives in, there are no nations.
So you're saying that the White House was beginning to appear impotent and as though it lacked any substance or power, and so it was propped up and revitalized in terms of its image of being a powerful organization by
getting rid of the president.
Wow. Pumped it back up and gave it. That's interesting.
Create the disease and offer the cure, you know, that old aphorism.
Yeah.
And who did that? Who needed distraction from the big discovery of the global economy? And this is 30, 40 years ago. Globalization now is a cliche, but 30, 40 years ago, the global economy was the hidden ground. You distract people by having lots of local national activity going on, national in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've had scandals in governments all over the world over the last 30 years. That's all you get.
Right.
Nothing but scandals. That's the news needs a scandal every 6 months on the big level. They got scandals daily in the headlines locally.
Because it distracts people from what? What would happen if people
perceiving that the eye is not there? Because they get these stories from TV and newspapers, and that's what they think is visual material. So they see something that's happening over there. But they don't want to see and discover that they don't have any visual dimensions, and they're all imploded into one tactile resonating interval.
What would the effect of everyone perceiving that be? What's the threat?
I would say the activity of the last 40, 50 years is the effect, because everybody is seeing it and then not being able to translate into their local identity. So you have nothing but war, violence, chaos, drug addiction, everything that people, global warming, catastrophe, wars, nuclear war. All those things are expressions of the identity crisis of adapting to this new situation. And you could stop this just by turning off the new situation.
Yeah. And the threat of the loss of identity terrifies.
Yes, look at the next quote.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, the next two quotes from Take Today, first one from page 261, next one from page 205, read those two quotes. They address exactly what you just said.
Maintenance of social power is, in fact, the manifestation of social identity. And the next quote. The super enterprise, like the super audience, works for itself.
Yeah, not for anything else. And that is explained by the next quote from Take Today. This is from a guy named William Jovanovich, who was the publisher of Take Today, who was a friend of McLuhan's. He said what?
Quote, "The computer is the first machine that consumes and produces the same material, dash, information." And that's William Jovanovich?
Yeah.
Unquote.
It consumes and produces the same material. That's the super audience working for itself. And that's the maintenance of social power, which is the manifestation of social identity. If you want to have an identity, you got to have an expression of that. And that's usually violence.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And this would strike others as base betrayals of the original aims and purposes of the established forms. Established forms being visual space forms, kinetic space forms, American meme. They are there to do certain, provide some benefits, and those benefits are not getting realized because there are new environments creating new tensions, new identity crises, and new issues. And if you just want to preserve the past, you'll miss what's going on in the present. If you want to preserve the past, you'd see what the present was going on, then you could turn off the present and then preserve your past. Meanwhile, in that confusion, top secrecy on local issues is translated to public participation. In other words, each president had to have a scandal in some way to attract people's attention to the White House. What'd you do in 1960? You shot the guy. What'd you do with the next guy? You had him resign after one term, LBJ. What'd you do with the next guy? You have him win landslide and then impeach him. That gets a lot of attention. What do you do with the next guy? Guy from the South with a brother running around making deals in Libya. You know, Billy Carter. And then he gets all screwed up in the Middle East. And then you bring in an actor. That'll get your attention. Here's a guy who's not qualified to do anything because he's an actor. Yet you can take the most important position in the world. Big thing there is that it is a virtual act. So it actually is relevant to get an actor. But that fascinates people because it's quite strikingly a betrayal of the original aims and purposes of the established forms. Then what do you have after that? You have a CIA director. That'll get attention. Then after that, you have some clown from a draft dodger. And then after that, the draft dodger being Clinton. And then after that, you have the stupidest guy in the country be president. That'll give you attention. That'll create great public participation. Call local media. Make movies about them.
Hmm.
Fahrenheit 911. Anyways, you see, the information imagery locally feeds on itself.
I'm thinking of McLuhan's quote where he says that the stripper
takes off her clothes and puts on the audience.
And so the collective super audience is putting on social identity and wearing that as clothing. And
ripping off everybody's local identity. By the international, in other words, what's it do? It the global environment takes off everybody's clothes, but puts on the whole world with local participation in information scandals. That's like striptease.
Yeah.
She takes off her clothes, gets attention, and yet people don't have a chemical body anymore. They live in a TV body, which you can't clothe with the chemical body stuff. So let's just go on to the next. We're going to go through this fast just to get people, while we're talking about it, show the collage. And then we're going to read them all again. But the next quote is from Take Today. What's it say?
"The new overkill is simply an extension of our nervous system into a total ecological service environment. Such a service environment can liquidate or terminate its beneficiaries as naturally as it sustains them."
Yeah. Now, the next quote, which is from a book called Hot and Cool, a collection of articles on McLuhan after understanding media, which came out in 1967. This critics commenting on McLuhan with McLuhan's answers to their criticism. But one of the phrases was the global village that he made famous at that time in the mid-60s. And everybody thought that was a pastoral image of peace and utopia. And they didn't know that McLuhan knew that villages were very violent places. So, we're talking about overkill, and such a service environment can liquidate or terminate its beneficiaries as naturally as it sustains them. Let's read the next quote. This is from page 279, 280. when I'm listing quotes from Understanding Media, that's from the original book, not the MIT 1994 copy. So you have to get the 1960s copies of Understanding Media to know the page number references. That's just a side note. But now, from Hot and Cool, 1967 book, critics discussing McLuhan, McLuhan says,
"The more you create village conditions, the more discontinuity and division and diversity. The global village absolutely ensures maximal disagreement on all points. It never occurs to me that uniformity and tranquility were the properties of the global village. It has more spite and envy. The spaces and times are pulled out from between people, a world in which people encounter each other in depth all the time. The global, the tribal-global village is far more divisive, full of fighting, than any nationalism ever was. Village is fission, not fusion in depth."
Okay, so people think of a global village. What is it? What is Hillary Clinton titled her book? It Takes a Village? Who's her waking up the pastoral idea of local motherly concern about the children or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes a village to lead to nuclear war. Takes a village, doesn't take a village to lead to peace. It takes a village to lead to close involvement of everybody with everybody. Therefore, the stresses, strains of cultural differences and animosities will be intensified. So you're going to get maximal, as he says, maximal disagreement. And that feeds the newspaper machine. Endless controversy. So the culture has become more divisive on so many on every level over the last 30, 40 years, which is exactly what happens when you bring in the global village conditions under electric simultaneity. So Wired magazine starts in 93 being a manifesto for the new digital environment will bring together freedom of information exchange and create all kinds of benefits. And they hooked up McLuhan as their patron saint because they thought McLuhan said, oh, this will make the world more united and create a global village. The Internet will create a global village and bring in almost utopian possibilities. They didn't realize that the Internet was going to create even more war and revolution, which is what we have today. And then McLuhan predicted that. He predicted violence. If they knew what McLuhan really meant, they wouldn't have made him a masthead. So there's the complexities that we're talking about the big discoveries here. Big discoveries by McLuhan were protected by public incredulity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's his name? Bill Gates never brought in computers with the awareness that this will create maximal disagreement. He thought that this would, who knows what he thought. But
yeah.
Eventually, when he became very wealthy, he started saying, we need computers in every school. We need to make computers, have them out in the rural districts so people can get information. It's all content analysis. No awareness of what happens when you bring in these environments. Now, one could say, hey, you can stop these environments. You know, we're going to keep making better and better, more implosive technology. And so that's the issue. The technology is coming. We better develop a new language in discerning what it's doing to us.
But if the chip body links everyone together, creating this maximal disagreement, because everyone is in everyone's face,
yeah.
If a controlling entity can take control of the chip body, it sets up the possibility of a one-world government. Do you think that's possible?
That happened about 100 years ago with the telegraph. The one-world government was the League of Nations. Then they had maximal disagreement because of the radio environment and the coming TV environment, so you have World War II, and then that collapses, and then you have a replay of the League of Nations world government called the United Nations. And we know now, by the 70s, everybody said the United Nations doesn't work. That's because it's a bureaucracy for hardware commodities, including people. Now let's go back to that quote. The new colonialism exploits productive capacity and skilled management as software. The chemical body, your labor, becomes the content or software for this global theater. Economic nationalism of governments is thus defeated by economic internationalism of corporations. What is good for General Motors may ultimately be great for everybody but the United States. The old colonialism exploited the raw materials. That's what the United Nations is for. is exploiting the old raw materials. The peace and harmony between nations, obsolete nations, in exchange of their commodities. The United Nations becomes marginalized because the world government is not on the realm of bureaucracy. The world government is on the news and what the White House or the CIA, whatever you want to say, is the controlling mechanism of news. That is the world government. It's not a bureaucratic institution. It's the simultaneous interplay of instant replay and simultaneous interplay.
Yeah, and it's got a different spin in every country.
Yes, that's right. For local consumption, you have that bias hoiked up, either because humans can't handle themselves not being an identity, or the identity is imposed on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By their president, who says he's a president of a certain region with a map and a boundaries versus other areas around the map. And that's chemical body talk.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting because...
Now, in light of this, we see that McLuhan, that LaRouche's ideas, as well stated and innovative as they are, become weak when we really perceive the information chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was just reading a Buddhist text on the... sort of, he was talking about the transcendence of the ego identity, and it probably is the most terrifying thing that anyone could face. And so now we're facing loss of identity, and what do we get in the world? Terrorism. Does that make sense?
Right. It's a projection, you could say. But the loss of identity is not an abstract thing. Think of, in 2 minutes, your house is going to be blown up. You're going to survive, but your roommate's going to be dead. That's a loss of identity. That's a loss of a medium.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about.
Well, that's not total loss of identity.
That is a terrifying loss of identity because it's a loss of a medium that you rely on.
Yeah.
Now, think of when we brought in TV, you blew down the house that existed under radio movie conditions in the first half of the 20th century. And when we brought in the satellite, we blew up the TV house.
Mm-hmm.
Each new medium blows up the previous medium.
Mm.
And then the old medium regathers its energies and adjusts.
Mm.
And then creates, recycles other cultural products.
Mm.
For example, when radio was blown up by television, rock and roll took over. It became the audience for radio, the youth market. Teenagers were born. The concept of teenagers was an effect of radio. It was the effect of television, and radio adapted by creating a new audience for itself and recycling music from the South, which then got recycled, 10 years later by the British for youth.
Mm-hmm. So these are successive acts of terrorism on the collective super audience.
Yes, and if you understand it more, then it's not the only effect. There are all kinds of services, because there's always an underlying ecology going on. That's why, the average American doesn't know what to do about anything when there's a crisis, because in a very inarticulate way, they say, well, if we do that, we'll lose that. We got a lot of good things from this. There were some bad things, but we can't give up that, because we'll lose the good things. So we'll put up with the bad things. That's what every North American person ends up doing. I just read a quote from Richard Linklater, the guy who made Slacker and then Waking Life. He's got a new movie called Fast Food Nation, and he's done Scanner Darkly, was it?
Yeah.
What's that called?
Scanner Darkly.
Yeah. And I just read an interview with him where he's saying, he was talking about, he had two movies at Cannes, Fast Food Nation and the Scanner Darkly. And I think it was Scanner Darkly, he's talking about how he, his movies show America is a very evil situation, but he's not out doing any activism about it. He says he's that his family look after, mouths to feed, but he's guilty about not being an activist. And he says, that's the fate of most of us. We see the problems, but we can't do anything about it. Now, that's a very inarticulate, accurate, but inarticulate assessment of all the factors that I'm trying to spell out here. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What can you do about Bill Gates? You cannot convince him that his computers were 100% bad in their effects. And you couldn't convince him it was 100% good. It's always 50-50. And that seems to be the human cliche. So it's pretty hard to get definite about anything. If you do get definite and purposeful, you become an extremist, it looks like. It's presented as, right?
Yeah. The thing that's disorienting is that human identity resists change. And human identity is very stubborn and likes to stay the way it is.
That may be good, because for the majority of us experience, you had to hold on to what you had, because what was coming wasn't going to stay there very long.
But now what's coming is turning over so fast,
yeah.
You don't have anything to stand on in terms of maintaining a continuity throughout a lifetime.
Right. So that's a very frustrating time. That's the 20th century, most violent century probably in history. I mean, it's been the greatest in terms of population. You could say there's a continuity when there was only 2 million people on the planet, 100,000 died. That was a lot when there was 2 million. Well, now we got 6 billion, so you're going to have 100 million die. That's probably the same ratio. So you could take it that way. It's always the same. Or there's something else going on that makes this century unique. It is unique in terms of the artifacts that it lives with.
Yeah.
But everybody knows that.
I don't know if this is a true statement or not, but it's possible that the only way that consciousness can develop and push itself into greater awareness is through the threatening of the identity and the overturning of the identity.
Yeah, pushing it into awareness is done by that means. You say pushing, if you want to push people into awareness, you have to turn over.
Yeah, if there's something called we've seen the conscious evolution of human beings over the last 2,000 years, maybe. And it may be that the furthering the development of that conscious evolution has to do with the threatening and the overturning of the identity.
Yeah, now that's what McLuhan said was unique about the 20th century, and he said this is what Joyce's message was with the title of his 1939 book, Finnegan's Wake, is that for the first time humanity was more awake than it had ever been, because it went through so many technological changes that eventually, by halfway through the century, it could see that technology was changing it. Changed in the 19th century and before, it was too slow for people to realize technology was causing the changes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have speeded up technological turnover, then people can see, well, obviously, after a while, that this technological change is coming in, and that's causing the upset. And so people instinctively knew the medium was the message. They wouldn't put it in those terms. They'd just say change was the message. But now people are so used to change, they'd probably get upset if there wasn't any change. So we've overextended the process of becoming aware, where it's flipped into becoming a numbness again.
Mm.
Or awareness is obsolete. People now accept technology. At least three-quarters of themselves, the other 20% worries about the carnage it sees in the content, which content creates participation and identification with.
Yeah, I don't know where to go from that last statement. Awareness is obsolete.
Right, okay.
Becoming awake is possibly obsolete.
Okay, with that, let's go to the next quote, which is from Understanding Media, page 179. Let's see if it answers where to go.
The student of media soon comes to expect that the new media...
Now, here's the student of media begins to become aware of the process, because this is what it's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
So do it again.
All right. The student of media soon comes to expect the new media of any period, whatever, to be classed as pseudo by those who have acquired the patterns of earlier media, whatever they may happen to be. This would seem to be a normal and even amiable trait, ensuring a maximal degree of social continuity and permanence amidst change and innovation.
Yeah, those that are ignoring the changes, their conservativeness is a benefit because they maintain a degree of social continuity by remembering the past because they can't see the present and living in the past. But then he says,
but all the conservatism in the world does not afford even a token resistance to the ecological sweep of the new electronic media. On a moving highway, the vehicle that backs up is accelerating in relation to the highway situation. Such would seem to be the ironical status of the cultural reactionary. When the trend is one way, his resistance ensures a greater speed of change. Control over change would seem to consist in moving, not with, but ahead of it. Anticipation gives the power to deflect and control force.
So that's a new kind of awareness. You're anticipating what's coming, not just becoming aware of what's happening right now.
Yeah. And it seems like that anticipation would bring in the Tetrad manager point of view.
Yes.
Although I'm still yet to be convinced that Tetrad management is actually precise and practical. I see it as more of a sort of philosophy. I'd be really surprised if Tetrad management could truly be used to predict the effects of new media, the retrieval of old media, the obsolescence of present media, and so on and so forth.
We're going to get into that in about 6 months. That's too far down the road.
Yeah.
We'll get into that with the Dobbs quadrant. But the next quote is moving along, take today, page 166. I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to go back and read some others. He says, in light of what you were just saying, Scott, we torment others by hardware. Think of scandals and news content. We torment others by hardware using the old organization chart. Uh-oh, we have to impeach the president, the head of the tribe, right? And we participate in this torment through software by holding the new media mirror up to old nature, as it were. This process transforms the torture of work into the refined torture of art, the primal curse laid on man. He will earn his bread by the sweat of his brow. Today, the sweat is empathy, identifying and participating in whatever the media stories are. I'm adding that phrase. Today the sweat is empathy, and the self-knowledge that is the most awful form of torment is awareness of one's own sordid motives manifested in their consequences. That's what you were getting a little upset about 5 minutes ago when you said, well, awareness is obsolete. I don't know what to say about that, because you're in that state of that most awful form of torment is awareness of one's own sordid motives manifested in their consequences. In other words, you begin to realize a lot of catch-22s.
Well, the sordid motives being the...
keep the show going so you can keep your TV body activated.
Yeah, so you're manipulating the situation out of a sense of panic, personal survival.
Not manipulating, you're continuing to participate in it. Because all these, participating in these new media wipes out all your old values. Yeah, you can't stop it. So you're guilty, and they look like sordid motives. And that's a state of torment, and you sweat with empathy. So I want to go back and read all these quotes again and see if people can get more meaning from them after we've said so much. All right?
All right. I'll just mention, I think we have about 10 minutes left on this side of the tape, so we may we'll probably be flipping the tape over before you finish reading all of this.
Okay, here we go. Top of page 13. The information environment of the electric world has increasingly merged private and public sectors of the older industrial world, pushing the world of staples and commodities out of the marketplace and into the political sphere. for banking, the question today would seem to be, what is its new role in a world where information is superseding hardware and in which politics has become a major form of show business? As show business becomes world business, the banker will experience an enormous extension of his advisory role in the political and bureaucratic sphere. The development of banking will be not toward the takeover of business, but of politics. Next quote. In Catch-22, the novel, the figure of the black market and the ground of war merge into a monster presided over by the syndicate. When war and market merge, all money transactions begin to drip blood. That's the murdered mafia guys littering the streets of New York City over the last 40 years. McLuhan says when the figure and the ground merge, they become a monster. So in this case, war and market merge. The ground of war and the figure of the black market.
So, yeah, under a new, well, when the ground and the figure merge, that means that there's a new hidden ground.
Yes. Old colonialism exploited the raw materials, i.e. hardware. New colonialism exploits productive capacity and skilled management and labor, i.e. software. And note, people are software. Chemical bodies are software. All right? In his definition of software.
Mm-hmm.
People as imagery and as information data exchangers are part of the new colonialism. Economic nationalism of governments is thus defeated by economic internationalism of corporations. What is good for General Motors may ultimately be great for everybody but the United States. Only puny secrets need protection. Big discoveries are protected by public incredulity. Today, apart from government itself, the biggest showbiz... Now, so he's saying government is a big showbiz. Today, apart from government itself, that's politics as showbiz, the biggest show business is putting secrets on display. We're going to get into that with a few quotes coming up. Scandals, right? Puny secrets on display. So today, apart from government itself, the biggest show business is putting secrets on display, whether of the CIA, FBI, KGB, MI5, Watergate. Not like Perry Mason, but the real McCoy.
Yeah, now what's that reference? Not like Perry Mason, but the real McCoy.
Perry Mason was a TV show. Remember, he was a lawyer.
Yeah.
So he's saying we're not putting on secrets like TV shows, fictional TV shows do. They're like metaphors. We're putting actual secrets on, what he calls the real McCoy, which was a slang term for supposedly something real. And he puts it in quotes because it's not really real in terms of chemical body. It's software reality, which many people think is pseudo. Remember the later quote? New media looks like it's pseudo. So the real McCoy is actual information put out, not a sitcom, right?
Mm.
So, and think of Art Bell, the manufacturing of secrets every night.
Mm-hmm.
Or the putting them on display.
Mm-hmm.
All, you know, McLuhan was writing this 40 years ago, that putting things on display, secrets on display, was just the beginning. Now it's inflated into overkill. Today, apart from government itself, the biggest show business is putting secrets on display, whether of the CIA, FBI, KGB, MI5, or Watergate, not like Perry Mason, but the real McCoy. As nature imitates art. See, nature is inside art, art being the information environments. Private history in camera, in secret, has become public myth. In other words, we've got a president, we're going to get rid of him. It's a myth that the president has any power because nations don't have power. So you have public myth, like Watergate, by time compression on camera, just as the hitherto op scenes now on stage. That's, you know, media, Hollywood getting more risque over the last 40 years than anybody could imagine 40 years ago, because you're putting the obscene on stage. A deja vu of all times and places now here. By recognizing this cliche archetype pattern, we can prophesy what has already happened. Scenarios, obsolescent at peak performance, will proliferate as art forms, while present action moves from sequent play to simultaneous interplay and instant replay. One of the many flips of our time is that the electric information environment returns man to the conditions of the most primitive prober and hunter. Privacy invasion is now one of our biggest knowledge industries, like putting secrets on display. Private history, that's privacy invasion. Douglas Cater emphasizes the paradox that the press is dedicated to the process of cleansing by publicity, and yet that, in the electronic world of the seamless web of events, most affairs must be kept secret. That is why most affairs, which is the ground, is the fact that the word makes the market. That's a big secret. Top secrecy, and that's kept secret. That's public incredulity again. Top secrecy is translated into public participation. and responsibility by the magic flexibility of the controlled news leak. Now, when you read the word top secret, you'd say, well, nobody wants to participate in that. Nobody wants it revealed. But he's saying it is public participation because they're obsolete secrets. And the controlled news leak keeps releasing obsolete secrets. When the electric speed is introduced into such a delegated and representational organization, this, like Congress, this obsolescent organization can only be made to function by a series of subterfuges and makeshifts. These strike some observers as base betrayals of the original aims and purposes of the established forms. The maintenance of social power is, in fact, a manifestation of social identity. The super enterprise, like the super audience, works for itself. The computer is the first machine that consumes and produces the same material, information. The new overkill is simply an extension of our nervous system into a total ecological environment. Such a service environment can liquidate or terminate its beneficiaries as naturally as it sustains them. The more you create village conditions, the more discontinuity and division and diversity. The global village absolutely ensures maximal disagreement at all points. It never occurred to me, says McClellan, that uniformity and tranquility were the properties of the global village. It has more spite and envy. The spaces and times are pulled out from between people. That's their cultural biases. Their spaces and times are pulled out from between people. Think of Einstein. Space-time continuum, obsolete notion compared to environmental spaces and times. The spaces and times are pulled out from between people, a world in which people encounter each other in depth all the time. The tribe, everybody in there, everybody else's face and body and insides, inside their digestive system. McClellan goes on, the tribal global village is far more divisive, full of fighting, than any nationalism ever was. Village is fission, not fusion, in depth. Now, he was saying that in 1965, 66, and yet in 67, the young people thought peace was going to break out with their hippie love-ins. Allen Ginsberg, propagandist for that. Next quote, the student of media soon comes to expect the new media of any period whatever to be classed as pseudo, as unreal, as virtual, if you mean by virtual, not real. He expects them, okay.